Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Hilliard Macbeth, author of the second edition of the book, When the Bubble Burst, Surviving the Canadian Real Estate Crash. He's also a portfolio manager and financial advisor in Edmonton. His website, MacbethMacLeodPartners.com. Welcome back to the show, Hilliard.
Nice to be here, just waiting for summer to start.
Yes, in Vancouver, it's been rainy and cool, but compared to last year at the same time when it was 40 degrees Celsius, 104 Fahrenheit, and between 600 and 800 people died, I'll take this cool, wet weather.
I guess we should be grateful, yeah, although I would like to have a few days when I'm complaining about the heat.
Well, the problem in Vancouver is the lack of air conditioning. When it gets hot here, because our average summer temperature is 22 or 72 Fahrenheit. That's average.
Yeah, nobody needs air conditioning in Vancouver.
Ah, you do. My air conditioner's on right now. So it's warm enough today because my office faces south and it's all glass. Hilliard, inflation and interest rates intermixed. They always say the cure for inflation is high interest rates. Is that the cure? And is this inflation thing about to slow down?
Well, this week, the minutes, so they have this thing in the U.S., the Federal Reserve has these meetings, and they decide whether they should hike interest rates, and they've been hiking interest rates now for a while. And then about a month after they have the meeting, they release the minutes of the discussion that the members of the committee that decide to raise interest rates, what they actually said. And the big issue is, and this is what they talked about, is if we're going into recession, will the Federal Reserve have the stomach to keep raising interest rates if inflation doesn't come down right away? So assuming that inflation doesn't come down right away, which I think is a pretty good assumption, it looks like the Fed and the Bank of Canada and the Bank of England and the European Central Bank, they're all going to be in a position of raising interest rates, even though a recession perhaps has already started. You know, there's some talk in the U.S. that the GDP might have been negative in the first quarter and the second quarter, which has just ended June 30th. So technically, you could argue that we're already in a recession, but the central bankers have no intention so far of abandoning their quest to get interest rates higher. They need to get them higher. Their interest rates are very low still, even after all these hikes. They probably need to maintain their credibility to get the interest rates higher. So it'll be very interesting. It's almost like a Volcker thing from the early 1980s when he raised interest rates up to 19% eventually, even though there were two recessions in the middle of that. So will the current Federal Reserve have the willingness to ignore all the complaints? There will be lots of complaints to keep raising interest rates, even though the economy starts to get pretty bad. And the stock market also is down into a bear market as well. I don't know the answer to that. That's going to be very interesting. In their discussions, they indicated that they plan to keep raising interest rates no matter what.
One of the candidates running for the Conservative Party of Canada leadership, Pierre Poilievre, says the first thing he'd do is fire the head of the Bank of Canada. Should there be political interference in the central banks, or should the central bankers just be allowed to do what they're supposed to do without interference? Does such a world exist?
Well, I think the whole idea of independence of the central bank, and there was a famous incident with Coyne, who's the head of the Bank of Canada, and there was a resignation over it because of the idea of independence. But the main reason for the independence of the central banks is actually not very well understood. And that is, the central banks are a convenient scapegoat for the start of a recession, and the politicians like to have that And they could say, well, we didn't erase history. So we didn't trigger the recession. It's not our fault. Don't vote us out. Because generally people like to vote governments out when there's a recession. So as a politician, he shouldn't be arguing to get rid of the independence of the central bank. He should be thankful that the central bank is there, and maybe he can blame the central bank for the problem. Now, of course, if it happens before the election, of course, they're going to blame the Liberal government and especially Justin Trudeau. But Justin Trudeau is going to turn around and say, I didn't do it. The Bank of Canada raised interest rates. So that's what caused the recession. It wasn't me.
So so it's a convenient scapegoat. What should its proper function be, and will it ever do it?
Well, I think the main goal of central banks in the beginning was to stop the instability of the banking system, because there was quite frequently there were these runs on banks where the banks would confidence would evaporate, and you know, the first bank of some small town in Illinois, and all the depositors would go to the bank and try and withdraw their money, and of course the bank didn't have enough money, so they invented the central bank, and they had all kinds of regional banks that made up the central banks in the U.S. And their main idea was that they were kind of like a backstop for the banking system, so you could feel safe about your money. And they had Brinks trucks that would take currency to the local banks, and if they had to print a little bit of money to keep people happy, people could withdraw their money and they'd feel confidence in the banking system. Then later on in the 70s, when the inflation rose and became so dramatically much higher and became a big problem, the central bank's role became fighting inflation, and that's probably the main role that they should have. But now they've added the third thing, which is they're supposed to also stop the economy from going into recession. So they're supposed to be responsible for the stability of the banks. They're supposed to fight inflation, and they're also supposed to stop recessions. Well, they'd be lucky if they could do one of those three things, and they're going to have no chance of doing all three. So I think what probably they should be responsible for is working on the idea of not letting inflation get out of control. So once inflation gets out of control, once people start thinking, oh, prices will be 10 or 20% higher next year, I should buy now, I should buy that house now, I should buy that car now, I should do everything now. Oh, no, by the way, I'm going to go to my employer and demand a wage increase to pay for all this. The concept of runaway inflation is not far off. And once that inflation expectation gets embedded, and so that's what the central bank should be working on primarily, and that's mostly, it's a big part of the training of PhD economists, which most of the employees at central banks are in that category. So it would be ideal for them to do that. Unfortunately, they haven't succeeded very well. So, of course, nobody saw this current bout of inflation coming, but they obviously made a big mistake by keeping interest rates way too low for way too long.
We'll have more with Hilliard Macbeth right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Hilliard Macbeth. Hilliard, Canada reported a $5.3 billion trade surplus in June, its highest trade surplus since 2008. But we remember what happened back in 2008. The U.S. went into a horrible recession, Canada a bit of one. Does this tell us that, okay, this is really great, this is nice, but how long can the good times last, especially with the stock market bleeding?
Yeah, unfortunately, the record trade surplus, I mean, we've been in a deficit of trade deficit for quite a while now. What it really means, well, there's two things it's saying. Is one is that the price of oil has gone way up. As in 2008, you mentioned 2008, the oil price went to $140 a barrel. And recently in March, the oil price went to $123 a barrel. It's down a little bit now to about $100 a barrel. So that's where all the income came in from selling that oil into U.S. dollars, mostly all of our oil goes to the U.S. So we had a trade surplus. But the other side of the equation is how much imports did we have? And the fact that the surplus is so big, I haven't had a chance to look into the details, but my suspicion is that it shows that Canadians are getting nervous about buying stuff and they've slowed down their pace of buying. So it could be a signal that we're getting into a weak economic period, perhaps a recession, and they've started to slow down their purchases of imports. Now, if the Canadian dollar, now the Canadian dollar's dropped from about 80 cents down to about 76 cents, that helps, you know, with exports, but it hurts with imports. So, it isn't necessarily a good sign that we have such a massive trade surplus. It might be an indicator that the economy is slowing, and it would be quite a rapid slowdown in the economy if that turns out to be the reason.
The Canadian dollar, we always connect it to the U.S. dollar, and so it's around 77 cents U.S. Yet, if you take a look at the British pound, back in March, the British pound was $1.72 Canadian. Now it's now $1.50 something, a 20 cent drop. The Canadian currency is actually, I think, held up well against the U.S. currency compared to other worldwide currencies. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's a good observation. The U.S. dollar has been extremely strong. Put it this way, against the euro and the British pound and all the other currencies pretty much in the world, and the Canadian currency has been just a little bit weaker than the U.S. currency. So, now the U.S. dollar against the euro is almost at parity, which is a huge change from not very long ago. And the Canadian dollar would be almost as strong as that. So that also would hurt in terms of it helps. It actually helps in one way, and that is our inflation would be much higher if our Canadian dollar drops against the U.S. dollar, because we buy so much of our stuff coming in from other countries, and the cost of those goods would go up. So, but you know, generally people think in a small economy like Canada that's really involved in exports, a weaker currency would be better. And unfortunately, we're tied to the U.S. currency, and the U.S. currency has been very strong. So, unless you're planning on a holiday in Europe or Great Britain or something, which makes it a very positive thing to have such a strong currency, most of the other impacts are negative for Canadians if the Canadian dollar is too strong.
Toronto real estate sales are down, prices down. Is this the end of the Canadian real estate bubble?
I think it might be. You know what, I hesitate to say that because I've obviously been early on my call for the Canadian housing bubble to burst. But I think the combination of that incredible rally we had in housing purchases beginning in the COVID panic of March of 2020, Canadian banks added issued mortgage debt at the rate of an increase of over 10% per year for 2 years in a row. House prices went up 20 or maybe even 30% over that period. And now interest rates have gone way up. So the average person was looking at roughly a 1.9 to 2.9% mortgage a couple of years ago. And now if they take a variable rate, they can get a better rate than this. But if they take the 5-year fixed rate, they're looking at 5% or even higher. So, the stress test for qualifying for a new mortgage has gone way up. It could be as high as 7%, for some people. So, that is, very, very difficult for, people that are trying to sell their houses in Toronto or Vancouver or even in Edmonton or Calgary. The qualifying rate at being 5 or 6 or 7% is going to knock a lot of buyers out of the market if they're trying to buy with a mortgage. And you know, contrary to these rumors that fly around and all that, there just aren't that many all cash buyers. Most people that buy houses have to get a mortgage, and if they can't qualify, they can't buy, and if they can't buy, then the housing prices come down.
Hilliard, Alberta posted a $3 billion plus budget surplus. Is that all because of the high price of oil?
Yes, there's a combination of two things. So the price of oil has gone way up, as we mentioned. But secondly, the oil sands, there haven't been any oil sands plants built for a number of years now. There was a huge construction boom in oil sands plants that started around 2000, 2001 with a very favorable taxation royalty regime that was brought in by Ralph Klein in Alberta and Jean-Claude Chen as Prime Minister in Canada. They agreed on this, and the way it worked was it wasn't really a royalty. It's really what would be termed in mining a net profits tax. So what you do is you deduct all of your expenses, your capital costs and your operating expenses. And once you get through all of that, then you start paying a pretty decent tax rate or royalty rate, you can call it. But only after all of those other expenses have been recovered. And these oil sands plants were supposed to cost $1, $2, $5 billion. They ended up costing $7, $8, $10, $12 billion. The last one that was built, I think, came in around $10 or $12 billion. I forget the exact number. So that's a lot of revenue to pay for those capital costs before you had to actually pay any royalties, any significant royalties. Well, even the last plant, which I think was Fort Hills, is now recovered most of that cost of the cost of construction the plant and other expenses. And so now they have to pay the much higher royalty. So the royalty jump is partly due to price increases on the oil, but it's mostly due to this interesting tax regime that they brought in, which is finally starting to pay off for Albertans and for Canadians.
Hilliard, anything else that we should be keeping an eye on right now?
Well, I think one of the things that we already mentioned and touched on, and I would add to it, is watch the price of oil. The oil price of oil has come down from $123, this is the U.S. WTI, to below 100, and it bounced back up to 100 on Thursday. But when in the past, like in 2008, when the oil price drops from a high like that dramatically, that's usually a pretty good indicator of a recession. So if we watch that closely, we'll be able to tell if we actually are in a recession. Because usually when the official arbiter of when a recession starts actually finally declares that a recession has started, they're months behind. They won't declare it's a recession until as much as 6 months after the recession actually starts. So we need a better indicator of that, and the drop in the oil price is actually a pretty good indicator of that. Everybody uses a lot of oil, and if they're struggling in a recession, they cut back on their oil purchases, and you can see that start to show up in the price of oil.
Hilliard, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thanks, Jim.
My guest has been Hilliard Macbeth, author of the second edition of the book, When the Bubble Burst, Surviving the Canadian Real Estate Crash. You can find him on Twitter at HMACBE. If you have any questions for Hilliard or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.